Hello and welcome to Jazz Northwest, our regular Sunday afternoon survey of the regional jazz scene. I'm Jim Wilkie. Today we present a concert in the Art of Jazz series from the Seattle Art Museum, presented on the second Thursday of each month from 5:30 to 7:30. The series is curated by Earshot Jazz, John Gilbreth, the executive director, and with the support of the Seattle Art Museum and media support from KPLU, this ongoing series presents a great variety of Seattle jazz artists and occasional visitors. Today's program is one which features compositions by Steve Griggs, a saxophonist, composer, and writer who's made his home in Seattle since the 90s. He has performed and recorded with the Jim Knapp Orchestra, Milo Peterson's Jazz Disciples, and has recorded four CDs on his own, including two with the late Elvin Jones on drums. As a writer and historian, he has contributed jazz articles to Earshot Jazz and other publications, and he also works in information technology for clinical research. Steve Griggs' newest CD, Panama Hotel Jazz, is a suite of original music inspired by the history of the Panama Hotel, Seattle jazz history, and the story of a Chinese boy and a Japanese girl during World War II, as described in the novel Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet by Jamie Ford. We'll hear an extensive sampling of music from the suite played in concert by a quintet, including Steve Griggs on tenor sax, Jay Thomas on trumpet and flugelhorn, Susan Pascal on vibes, Milo Peterson guitar, and Phil Sparks on bass. This is the same personnel that played seven performances of the suite at the Panama Hotel last fall, funded by a grant from For Culture Historic Site Specific Program. Steve Griggs will tell you more about the story and each selection as we go along. But first, here is the opening title piece, Panama Hotel. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That piece was called The Panama Hotel, and it was written specifically for the Panama Hotel. It was supported through a Four Culture Historic Site-specific grant, and I researched the history of the Panama Hotel and its role in our community. A few years ago, I spoke with Jim Wilkie, and we talked about the Seattle jazz history. He suggested that I read Jamie Ford's novel Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet. For those of you who haven't read, it's a love story between a Chinese boy and a Japanese girl set around the time of World War II on Jackson Street. And a key token of their relationship is a record of a fictitious jazz performance that gets stored in the basement of the Panama Hotel. So last year, the Panama Hotel was selected as a location for site-specific art funded by King County. I recalled the novel and the symbolic jazz record. I decided to learn what I could about the history of the building and its role in the community. I also searched Seattle jazz history to imagine how the song stored in the Panama Hotel basement might have sounded. As I researched for this project, I was overwhelmed by the number and extent of stories published. I put a bibliography online at panamahoteljazz.blogspot.com. Today's presentation is by no means a complete depiction of stories and events, but I hope that it raises awareness about this historic building and its role in our shared history. The building was designed by Saburo Ozasa. He was the first Japanese architect to practice in Seattle. It was built in 1910 and continuously operated as a hotel since the day it was built. The first owners were Japanese umbrella organizations, with non-Japanese members as the publicly listed owners because Japanese were excluded from property ownership. Takashi Hori bought the hotel in 1938 and operated it until Jan Johnson purchased it in 1985. And you can see Jan answering the phone, and she's running the laundry and signing people in. She's a force to be reckoned with. The basement of the hotel contains the only intact Japanese public bath, or sento, left in the United States. Many Japanese immigrants lived, worked, or were visitors in the Panama Hotel. During my research of Japanese aesthetics practiced by immigrants, what resonated with me is the desire for every person to infuse daily tasks or common objects with art to enhance the natural beauty of the world. One story told of a Japanese-American farmer who collected stones for his garden. The extra stones he placed under the eaves of his house. So when it rained and no one could work out in the fields, he called everyone in to create poetry to the sound of rain falling on the stones. This next piece I titled Poem. Thank you. Immigrants have been a part of Seattle ever since the Denny Party landed here in 1851. The land south of Yesler Street and the filled-in tidal flats of the Duwamish River became home for much of Seattle's non-white population. Chinese, attracted by the possibility of finding gold on the West Coast, immigrated in the late 1800s. In fact, they called America Gold Mountain. They dug mines, built our railroads, milled lumber, canned salmon. Racial discrimination led to a federal Chinese Exclusion Act in 1882 that suspended immigration and prevented American citizenship. Then local government forbade Chinese from owning property. Riots broke out in Seattle to ship all Chinese to San Francisco. The violent protests led the state governor and the U.S. president to declare martial law in Seattle. Japanese came to fill the labor shortage but were stopped by the Immigration Act of 1924. Then groups of Filipinos and African Americans came to Seattle. The Panama Hotel is located at the heart of Seattle's Nihonmachi, or Japantown. Since the 1920s, Main Street between 4th and 7th Avenues and businesses on a few nearby streets provided all the services the Japanese American community needed. Japanese businesses also extend beyond Nihonmachi. In 1940, even though the Japanese were only 2% of Seattle's population, they operated 17% of the groceries, 45% of the restaurants, 63% of the greenhouses, and 63% of the hotels and apartments. This is called Nihonmachi. Thank you.
Nihonmachi, part of the Panama Hotel Jazz, being performed in this Art of Jazz concert from the Seattle Art Museum by the Steve Griggs Quintet. It's coming to you on Jazz Northwest from 88.5 KPLU. Once again, here's Steve Griggs.
Jazz flourished in Seattle's non-white neighborhoods. Nightlife on Jackson Street fostered diversity. In 1933, the newspaper Northwest Enterprise described the scene, and I quote, "Here, all races meet on common ground and rub elbows as equals. Filipinos, Japanese, Negroes, and whites mingle in the same hotels and restaurants, and there is an air of comradeship," unquote. Traveling jazz musicians like Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and Billie Holiday stayed at hotels and ate at restaurants in the International District because they could not be served in the other parts of the city. Jazz musicians wrote music about Seattle. Pianist Jelly Roll Morton performed at the Entertainers Club at 12th and Main in the 1920s and wrote a song called Seattle Hunch because of his notorious gambling habit. Ray Charles wrote Rocking Chair Blues after the Rocking Chair Club on 14th and Yesler, and he played at the Black Elks Club on Jackson. In Jamie Ford's novel, Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, Seattle jazz musicians perform and record a song called Alley Cat Strut, dedicated to the two main characters. Although this is an imaginary song created by the author as a device in his book, I took the liberty of imagining how it might have sounded. This is Alley Cat Strut. Thank you. The attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941 changed Nihon Machi forever. Within 24 hours, Japanese-born men were taken to the immigration office just off Dearborn Street. Some were sent to military camps. FBI agents confiscated items from Japanese-American homes. Japanese-American families shed things that displayed loyalty to Japan. Families destroyed items linked to Japan, dolls, books, records, and family photographs. In a book titled Looking Like the Enemy, My Story of Imprisonment in Japanese-American Internment Camps, Mary Matsuda Grunewald tells the following story. We stood in front of the table, looking at all of our cultural treasures. Papa-san took a deep breath and said, "This is it. Let's get this difficult task done." He picked up the first phonograph record, read the label, and said to Mama-san, "This one, Sakura, is my favorite." Yoshiko-san's voice is so clear and beautiful, and the words evoke such feeling in me. With doleful eyes, he handed it to Mama-san, who also read the label. With teary eyes, she broke it into small pieces, stepped over to the stove, and slipped it into the flames. One by one, they looked over each record and took turns reading them, silently feeding their beloved music into the stove until every record was destroyed. The flames illuminated my parents' sad but determined faces. President Franklin Roosevelt issued an executive order that allowed the military to designate areas that would exclude people of Japanese ancestry. With no criminal charges or evidence of espionage, 120,000 Japanese Americans, two-thirds of them whom were born in America and thus citizens, were sent to assembly centers and a few months later to 10 camps in desolate locations. The personal items that they couldn't take with them or sell were stored in places like the Panama Hotel basement. When arriving at camp, many described the barren landscape, desert heat, dust storms, barbed wire, and sentry towers. This is called desert. Thank you. The Japanese national anthem, Kimigayo, while patriotic, can also be seen as a metaphor for personal endurance. Roughly translated, the lyrics say, "May thy peaceful reign last long. May it last for thousands of years, until this tiny stone will grow into a massive rock, and the moss will cover it deep and thick." Endurance meant survival for Japanese Americans, endurance of misunderstanding, endurance of discrimination, endurance of injustice, endurance of hardship, endurance of hatred. This is called Kimigayo. Thank you.
Kimi ga yo. The Japanese national anthem is adapted by Steve Griggs for Panama Hotel Jazz. This Art of Jazz concert coming to you from the Seattle Art Museum on Jazz Northwest from 88.5 KPLU. Once again, here's Steve Griggs.
120,000 Japanese Americans are in 10 prisons in remote locations in 1942. The U.S. government assumed that filial piety was paramount for all Japanese Americans. With suspicion that elder Japanese Americans were loyal to the Japanese Empire, cultural deference and respect for one's parents brought into question the perceived allegiance of the whole family to this country. In an attempt to distinguish loyal from disloyal, the government required every inmate over 17 years old to answer two questions while they were imprisoned. First, are you willing to serve in the armed forces of the United States on combat duty wherever ordered? Well, the average age of first-generation Japanese-American immigrants was 54. I'm 53. I don't want to go in the Army next year. So answering yes was inconceivable. The second question asked, will you swear unqualified allegiance to the United States of America and faithfully defend the United States from any or all attack by foreign or domestic forces and forswear any form of allegiance or obedience to the Japanese emperor or any other foreign government, power, or organization? Well, Japanese-born inmates were not permitted to become American citizens by law. So answering yes to forswearing allegiance to Japan would leave them stateless, and children answering different than their parents might separate families. How can one pledge allegiance to a government that denies citizenship to immigrants, restricts civil rights based on race, assumes guilt by association, and incarcerates citizens without charging them with a crime? This is called loyalty. Thank you. Japanese-American families did what they could do to support one another. The Seattle-born and educated architect Minoru Yamasaki, who had later designed the World Trade Center in New York, had his parents join him in his East Coast apartment to avoid incarceration. George Tsurukawa, whose sculpture stands on Maynard down in the International District, met his future wife while he visited family in a camp. Takashi Hori, who owned the Panama Hotel, was the first to be allowed to return to Seattle from camp without an escort. And he and his brother came back to the Panama Hotel for a week in September of 1944 to sort through the items in the basement and ship things back to families at the Minidoka camp in Hunt, Idaho. But camp life eroded familial bonds. Takashi Hori told the Seattle Times in 1944, and I quote, "Camp life is a terrible thing, just as it would be for anyone. What you miss most is the home life. It isn't normal to be crowded together with hundreds of other people," unquote. Mess hall meals, abundant free time, fathers separated from families, and little or no privacy damaged the traditional Japanese family structure. This is called family. the American government has acknowledged its injustice. Over 40 years after the war ended, a government commission, finding scant evidence of Japanese disloyalty, recommended payment of $20,000 for each camp survivor. President Ronald Reagan signed legislation that apologized on behalf of the U.S. government for actions based on race prejudice, war hysteria, and failure of political leadership. President George H.W. Bush apologized again on the 50th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor bombing. The city of Seattle paid $5,000 to municipal employees that had been unjustly dismissed. Washington State supported the Seattle School Board's reparations to 27 Japanese-American citizens who were forced to resign as clerks for Seattle Public Schools based on a petition from the West Seattle PTA. While the acknowledgement and apology by the government is important, I find more significant the voices of the Japanese-Americans and the willingness to share experiences, honor ancestors, and teach lessons for the next generation. Thank you so much. You guys have been a great audience. Thank you.
That was Mending, concluding the excerpts from this Art of Jazz concert of Panama Hotel Jazz, presented by Earshot at the Seattle Art Museum. The music was composed, adapted, and arranged by saxophonist Steve Griggs, who was joined by Jay Thomas on trumpet and flugelhorn, Susan Pascal vibraharp, Milo Peterson guitar, and Phil Sparks on bass. The suite was inspired by the novel Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet by Jamie Ford. It was originally presented in a series of concerts last fall at the Panama Hotel, funded by a grant from the For Culture Historic Site-Specific Program. The complete studio recording of Panama Hotel Jazz has been issued on CD by Hip City Records. For more information, see hipcitymusic.com. The Art of Jazz series at the Seattle Art Museum is presented on the second Thursday of each month. The next concert in the series will feature Sunny Brazilian Music by Jovino Santos Neto Quinteto on Thursday, March 13th from 5:30 to 7:30 in the Brotman Forum at Seattle Art Museum. Thanks to the musicians for allowing us to record and broadcast their music on today's show. Thanks to the Seattle Art Museum for hosting the series, Jonas for House Sound, and Earshot Jazz, John Gilbert, Executive Director, for planning and presenting the series. Coming up in 2 weeks is a special presentation of Duke Ellington's Such Sweet Thunder, inspired by Shakespeare and performed by the Seattle Repertory Jazz Orchestra in concert with actors from the Seattle Shakespeare Company. That will be on March 9th. I'm Jim Wilkie. This was a Hatch Cover production, exclusively for 88.5 KPLU. Stay tuned for The Art of Jazz with Ken Wiley. You're listening to 88.5 KPLU Tacoma, Seattle, 90.1 KPLI Olympia, 89.3 KVIX Port Angeles, Victoria, and 88.9 KPLK Cedro Woolley, a community service of PL.